Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Cavalytics, a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. We're available on both SoundCloud and iTunes, and we would appreciate likes and good ratings there if you enjoy what we're doing. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. Please email us. We like hearing from you. My co-host Arnav is here. How's it going, Arnav?
I'm doing pretty well. Not too happy about this loss, though.
Yeah, so the Cavs, about 10 minutes ago, just got finished losing to the Memphis Grizzlies by 3 points? Was it 104-101, something like that?
It was 106-103.
Okay, 106-103. The Grizzlies were featuring seven players out with injury, including Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, Mike Conley, Harrison Barnes, Matt Barnes, and then three other guys who are sort of inconsequential. But yeah, the Grizzlies and the Cavs were playing at home. This was not a game that the Cavs should have lost.
Oh, and Tony Allen had one of his best games ever, offensive games ever.
Yeah. How many points did he end up with?
26 okay. On 11 of 17 shooting. He was like driving incessantly.
Yeah.
There was no one to stop him at all.
He had at least one three, I remember.
He had one three. Yeah. He had three free throws. And he was a plus nine when he was on the floor.
Yeah. The Cavs were down 10 or maybe even 12 with about 6 or 7 minutes left. And they actually took the lead with about 2 minutes left. But somehow, the Grizzlies playing with eight players, the Cavs playing with no one injured at home, were unable to close out the Grizzlies. There were a couple officiating things in the last 2 minutes that maybe you could nitpick, but really, this one is sort of on the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously officiating wasn't perfect down the game, but I think the Cavs had 25 turnovers. And I'm pretty sure the officials weren't responsible for those.
Yeah, 25 turnovers. Is that a season high for the Cavs? It must be.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a bunch of games with like sort of mid-single digit turnovers lately, which has been really impressive.
I mean, it's really, really, it's a big outlier for Irving to have seven turnovers. He averages two turnovers a game.
Hold on, he only had seven? I thought he had like eight or nine.
No, I'm looking at now. It's only seven.
I think, look, I'm not going to go back through and like painstakingly chart Kyrie's turnovers, but yeah, I had him at seven, and then he had two more after that, so I think he had more. But okay, in any case, seven is sort of inexcusable. What do you think causes that sort of variance in turnovers? Is it laziness? Is it just bad luck? Is it?
This is an off game, I think. I mean, it's just not. This is not the norm for him. He's having a career in terms of turnover percentage.
Yeah.
It's only 8.7, I think, last I checked.
Yeah, I'm not like concerned that this is sort of like some sort of new normal for Kyrie Irving. I'm just curious what you think about what causes such a, like, the Cavs probably average like what, 11 or 12 turnovers a game. Like, what makes it so that they have double that in a single game?
Yeah, I would say some combination of lack of focus. I mean, and then the guys weren't in the right spot. So I mean, there was one play I remember. Love was rolling to the basket, and then Irving had a behind-the-back pass, thinking that he was going to pop on. And then that was a turnover there. Yeah. And then he had a few turnovers where he was running into, like, three people looking to score, but then he just lost the handle, which is really not the norm for him, right? He never loses the handle.
He had a couple like that. He had one where he dribbled it off his foot and one where he was trying to go behind his back, but which he does all the time. And
it's really uncommon for him. So I'm not that worried about him.
Yeah.
In terms of turnovers anyway. And he had a pretty good shooting night. So I don't think the big three were the problem tonight. I think it was the lack of production from everyone else.
You don't think Love's 2 of 9 and 4
But, I mean, he had 10 of 10 from free throw.
He did. I am cherry-picking here because I love to rag on Kevin Love.
Then he also had, you know, the like some good offensive rebounds in the end. He had four offensive rebounds, yeah.
He did. Yeah, I thought Love played all right. LeBron played okay himself. I mean, he had sort of four turnovers, but he shot 11 of 19.
It's not an ideal game, but I would still say it's a good game, you know?
Yeah.
I think the issue was that Delly was 1 of 6 from the field, 0 of 3 from three-point land. had 4 turnovers, only 3 assists, 2 rebounds only. And then J.R. Smith was 1 of 8 from the field. Sorry, 1 of 8 from 3-point land, 2 of 11 from the field.
Oh. Yeah. Brutal. Yeah, I mean, this box score is sort of like Medusa. You want to, like, turn your head away before you turn to stone. It's just disgusting looking. I don't like. I mean, look, Dellavedova had a bad game. I'm fine with sort of him playing a bunch still. What do you think about the Cavs rarely playing Channing Frye? He played 5 minutes tonight.
Yeah, he played five. I don't get why not. I mean, he should be getting some burn. He's a good He's an excellent 3-point shooter. He's an excellent jump shooter in general.
Right. Well, let's look at it here, okay? So Love played 33 minutes, James played 38, Irving 37, Smith 35. Mozgov started, but only played 11.
He was bad tonight. He was terrible tonight.
He was, yeah. He had a really bad start, and then he didn't really see much court time in the second half. Off the bench, only 5 players played. Thompson with 27 minutes, Delly with 26, Shumpert with 22, and then Jefferson with 7 and Fry with 5. I guess what you would say is instead of having LeBron play 38... You would have him come down to like 31, and that opens up 7 minutes for other guys to play. But even if LeBron played his sort of normal 34, 35 minutes, that would open up 3 more minutes for Fry. But yeah, I would like to see him play sort of like 11, 12 minutes a game, just to see if there's some sort of lineup that like he can be really.
I'm sure he has value to add, right? Like he's always been good by RPM.
Yeah,
and he has the attributes that you know. Would actually fit in a small ball lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Cavs are doing weird things lately. So they're playing Delly and Irving a lot together. They're playing Shumpert and Smith a lot together. And that creates a situation where it's sort of hard to find a time when you would have Fry out there because, you know, when you do those two lineups that I just described, you normally have LeBron at the 4 and then either Thompson or Mozgov at the 5. And if LeBron is playing Fry, I guess they could try Fry at the 5 with LeBron at the 4. I'm not sure.
The problem with Irving Delly is that some of these shooting guards are so big for Delly to handle.
Right.
He just can't. I think he's a good point guard defender, but I actually don't think he's a good shooting guard defender.
Yeah, that's something I've been meaning to look into. We should do that just to see. But yeah, my hunch is that Dellavedova's strength on defense is sort of mitigated.
Exactly. When he has to go against bigger players, yeah.
Yeah.
And also one more thing I'd like to add is that Tristan Thompson was a beast tonight. I mean, he was making hook shots. He was rolling to the basket really well. He was 5 of 6 from the field.
He was a plus 11.
And he was a plus 11 tonight, yeah. And he had 6. I guess he wasn't that good rebounding. Interestingly, he didn't have any offensive rebounds. But
yeah, that is sort of interesting. He had 3 blocks, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had 3 blocks.
A couple turnovers, 3 personal fouls. Yeah, he had... He had the optics of that box score aren't great, but the plus 11 is awesome.
Yeah, plus 11 when you lose by, 3? And then
we're
down 18 to begin, or 12 to begin with.
Yeah, that's right. I was wondering sort of toward the end of the game if this Grizzlies team with all of their good players benched or injured was worse than the Lakers team that the Warriors lost to last night. But thankfully, the Lakers team the Warriors lost to is significantly worse. Plus, the Warriors lost by, 18 points or something?
I think the blowout makes it even worse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe this is sort of not clear to all of our listeners, but yeah, losing by 18 points to a terrible team is significantly worse than losing by 2 points to a terrible team in terms of what that indicates about your team quality. Now, of course, the Warriors have sort of earned the right to have a bad game. They never seem to have off nights, and last night probably was just random. But you know, they all count, and yeah, that will affect a lot of their team quality scores. I'm sure both their ELO and SRS will be sort of profoundly impacted by that. Just to go through it really quick, I'm going to go through the SRSs of the players on both the Lakers last night.
And RPM,
the
Grizz-
and, yeah, sorry, the RPM and the. And the Grizzlies tonight. So the Grizzlies started Mario Chalmers at point guard. His RPM is negative 0.78. He is the 32nd best point guard in the NBA. At shooting guard, Tony Allen, who was by far their best player. He has a 1.36 RPM. He's the 12th best shooting guard, only slightly worse than the 11th best shooting guard, J.R. Smith.
And how much of that is from his defense?
I didn't write it down. I can look it up in a second. PJ Hairston, started at small forward. He is a negative 2.69 RPM. He's the 58th worst small forward in the NBA. At power forward, Jamichael Green started, negative 2 RPM, 71st best power forward. And at center, Ryan Hollins, negative 0.8 RPM, and he's the 46th best center. So that's pretty bad. That is a negative 4.91 SRS. You know, for
RPM.
Those RPM, oh yeah, I keep saying. Considering our last podcast was entirely devoted to RPM, you'd think I could get this right at this point. But yeah, so a negative 5 RPM roughly corresponds to, you know, 5 points worse than average per 100 possessions. The Lakers have a total, the guys they started last night have a total of negative 13 RPM. So mostly, well, not mostly, but a big part of that is Julius Randle. He is the 94th worst power forward. I think that makes him the second worst or third worst power forward in the NBA, negative 4.67 RPM. Roy Hibbert, negative 2.69, which makes him the 67th best center. Jordan Clarkson, negative 1.63, 46th best point guard. This is getting boring, but anyway. D'Angelo Russell, negative 2. He's the 51st best point guard. And then, of course, Kobe Bryant, negative 2.28 RPM, 51st best small forward in the NBA.
Not that bad.
Well, not that bad compared to where it was earlier this season, which
yeah,
was dead last for a while, right? Yeah, I mean, he is...
So, yeah, anyway, on Tony Allen,
yeah,
he obviously has the best defensive RPM for a shooting guard, which makes sense. But his offensive RPM is minus 2.11.
Oh, my God.
And we let this guy score 27 points tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know who to blame. I don't know if that's on Shumpert or Smith.
One of those games where he was just driving incessantly.
Yeah.
He was pushing our guys around, getting to the rim. Nobody could stop him.
He was. I mean, you know, if you watch just this one game, you would, you know,
you think he's the best shooting guard in the league.
Yeah, you would rightfully reach the conclusion that Tony Allen is MVP. yeah, that was quite the game.
Oh, and he also had 5 steals, by the way. So let's not forget that.
Yeah, well, that's probably just normal for him.
Irving had 4 steals. Kind of interesting.
Nice.
I guess he made up for some of his turnovers that way, which makes sense. That's why he's best one.
I would let him. Yeah. I would give him the benefit of the doubt there. All right, so we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. All right, so Tyronn Lue has been around for, 21 games now?
Yeah, so they're 6.
He's 14-7, right?
Yeah, 14-7, exactly. 21
okay.
games, yeah. So that's 66 win percentage.
Right. And I don't remember what they were under Blatt.
33-10.
Okay, so what's that, 79% or something like that?
No, 77%.
Oh, sorry, excuse me, 77%. So yeah, I mean they were you know, honestly significantly better under Blatt. I don't remember what their SRS was under Blatt. It's 5.86 now. I think it was around there.
It was around there. It was definitely not. We haven't hit 6 since the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I mean, certainly it was, you know, not a material difference, if any at all. So, all right. So their SRS is about the same. The record is pretty different, but, I'm more inclined to care about SRS. But I mean, the bottom line is they're basically the identical team. If anything, they're a little bit worse. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I guess the only thing is they've had good wins against good teams since then. Before, they were losing to the good teams.
Right.
But they've beaten the Spurs, and they've beaten all the good teams that they wanted to.
Right.
I think that's the only thing that's changed. But yeah, I mean, they've been losing to all these bad teams, so and inconsistency is never a good thing when you're predicting future outcomes. So.
I agree. Certainly, the inconsistency explains the Cavs' sort of mediocre SRS. Look, I'm being a little harsh on the team. Like, their SRS, I think, is what? Probably
5.86.
Yeah, and that's probably what?
Probably goes down a little bit, but yeah, tonight.
Is that fourth best in the NBA? Yeah, it's fourth best, right? The Warriors are 10.2, Spurs are 11.18, the Thunder are 6.18, and the Cavs are 5.86. And the next closest team is the Clippers at 4.2. The next closest in the East is the Raptors at 3.8. So the Cavs are, like, by far the best team in the East. And they're the fourth best team in the league. So they're not, okay, mediocre is the wrong word. This is, you know, disappointing, I guess I'll say. Do you think, okay, you were saying that inconsistency is a bad thing. I agree. However, could it be that the Cavs have an issue where they struggle to motivate against certain opponents in a way that some of the teams with better SRSs don't?
So the optics would suggest that.
Right.
But is that a good thing?
Well,
You know, like, it's obviously not a good thing.
for starters, we could figure it out, right? We could look to see if, you know, it must be the case, right? That the Cavs are basically, if you took like, you know, maybe the bottom 50, you know, the bottom 50th percentile of teams in the NBA and looked at the Cavs SRS against just those teams versus the SRS of the Warriors, Spurs, and Thunder against similar teams. My strong suspicion is that the Cavs would sort poorly on that graph. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I also saw a stat yesterday that showed that which teams in the league have a winning percentage against opponents that are above 500, and there were only four teams on the list. No, five teams on the list. So Warriors, obviously, Spurs, Cavs, Raptors, and OKC.
Yeah, that makes sense. I
Which
mean,
makes sense, yeah.
most of the NBA is hovering around 500 this year, so
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's a big part of that.
You know, the Grizzlies are 38-25 now.
I just saw that. They're the fifth seed in the West.
That's
Now,
crazy.
let's not give them any credit. I mean, Conley didn't play tonight. Gasol didn't play, and he isn't gonna play. Randolph didn't play. Barnes didn't play. So,
But they should get credit, right, for doing
oh
so well.
no. They should definitely get credit for the record. I just mean the team that we played tonight was nowhere near that level.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah. What I'm trying to figure out here is, okay, maybe the Cavs are weak of mind and are unable to motivate against bad opponents, which is bad. But the silver lining there could be that, like, look, maybe once the playoffs come along, that sort of taking your opponent lightly is less likely to happen, and the Cavs may actually have an effective team strength or SRS or ELO or whatever metric you want to use, that is, you know, better, ideally significantly better than what it actually is. What do you think about that theory? Am I crazy?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense, but do you think it's that they aren't mentally prepared for these weaker teams, or is it that they respond well to adversity so that when they go on like these two-game losing streaks and they get all this crap in the media, then they respond well after that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. And honestly,
It seems
like,
like the losing streak motivates them more than just the strength of the opponent.
yeah, I mean, it could be that, like, you know, LeBron calls them all at 3:30 a.m. and, like, you know, says, "I'm not going to stop doing this until you guys get your act together." I don't know, but yeah, there does seem to be something about, you called it adversity. I think that's a good word. When the Cavs have some sort of, like, you know, doldrums, they seem to come out and play well. After that, like, just when things seem like, you know, they couldn't get worse, they don't. The Cavs come out and, like,
Yeah,
you know,
they actually do much better.
have a
Which
big win.
kind of sucks because then you expect them to be down like, 2-0 in a series and then they'll finally start to play.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, if you play with fire like this in the playoffs, you're out.
Yeah.
And we were talking a little bit yesterday about, or yesterday, maybe it was sometime this week, about, you know, should we be afraid of the Raptors, and to some extent the Celtics?
Mean, yeah.
I mean, you know, so the narrative all season long has been that the Cavs are going to breeze through the East. But I don't know, man. You know, last time we played the Raptors, they played us really tough. In fact, they've played us tough sort of all year, except for the one blowout that we beat them.
I think the Warriors and the Spurs are going to have a much easier time with the West than we'll have with the East.
Yeah, well, only one of them is going to have to face the
Yeah,
Thunder.
I mean like to at least till the Western Conference. And yeah, only one of them is going to have to face the Thunder, so.
Right. Whichever one faces the Thunder, I don't think you can make that argument about. It's just that the one who faces the Thunder is probably going to be the Spurs, and the Spurs probably aren't going to beat the Warriors. So,
Yeah.
but if the Spurs did happen to make it to the finals after beating the Thunder and Warriors, you obviously couldn't say they didn't have a tough path to the finals.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring something that's a little bit off topic here, but the Cavs start a 4-game West Coast trip now. They play Sacramento on Wednesday, and they play somebody on Thursday.
That's true.
They play the Lakers on Thursday. Because it's the Lakers and because it is in LA and it's LeBron's last game against Kobe Bryant, I strongly suspect LeBron will play that game.
He did say technically that it's not going to influence Tyron's decision to bench him or not. But
Wait, who said that? When was that said?
yeah, so someone brought up that if Lou comes up to you and says that you should sit this game out, are you not going to sit the game out because this is your last game against Kobe? And he said, the fact that it's the last game against Kobe is not going to influence the decision at all. It'll be whatever the coach says.
The reason why I ask is, I live in San Francisco. I would like to drive out to Sacramento to see the game on Wednesday, but I'm not sure if it's worth basically 4 or 5 hours of driving out there and back.
Well, you think it'd be a blowout.
To not see LeBron James.
It should be a blowout, but who knows with this team.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Sacramento last year, and man, it was brutal. Yeah, so the Cavs played the Warriors on like a Friday, I think, and then they played the Kings.
Oh, was that the game where LeBron
was
sitting
on? The Kings on a Sunday. Yeah, LeBron set up for the game against the Warriors and the game against the Kings.
The Kings one was a blowout, right?
The Cavs lost terribly. The Cavs lost both games. It was...
But the one against Warriors, I remember they kept close till the fourth quarter.
It was close, yeah.
At which point they just blew it on.
I went with my girlfriend and my girlfriend's mom, and my girlfriend's mom is a huge Warriors fan and was saying how, you know, that she thought the Cavs were going to win. The Warriors won, and the Kings won, and it was, yeah, not happy times for me. So, anyway, yeah, I guess I'll go. I mean, I would like to go even if LeBron doesn't play, but I'm just trying to figure out whether I should wait to buy tickets until the Cavs make an announcement about LeBron.
I mean, you'll probably know by tomorrow, maybe? Yeah, but they sometimes make it on the same day, so you never know.
Yeah.
Either way, Irving's going to play, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah, I would like to see Kyrie and Kevin Love anyway. So, and this will be the first game. I saw 6 games last season. The Cavs were 1-5 in games I went to. this will be my first game this year. So, yeah, we'll have to see.
You mean you don't want to watch Delly?
Look, I like Matthew Dellavedova probably more than the average guy, just because like I sort of have in my mind quantify just how amazing he is. Yeah, he's not the kind of guy that, really inspires me to drive 5 hours. There was one other thing you mentioned before we started recording here that I thought was interesting. You were talking about the gap between the Warriors and Cavs and SRS. Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, I think I said that the gap between the Warriors and the Cavs in terms of SRS is about the same as the gap between the Cavs and the Magic.
Yes, that is exactly what you said, and that is a somewhat alarming thing. So the Magic are 27-34. They have an SRS of -1.68. And yeah, the Cavs...
I guess I was a little off. I shouldn't have picked the Magic.
Yeah, you could have
Let me see if I can find a better one.
Maybe the Wizards, who are -1. So let's see, we're 4 points.
Someone around one.
Yeah.
So maybe like the Cavs and the Pacers.
Yeah, Cavs and the Trailblazers, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it just
anyway,
sort
so
of,
the point is that the gap is pretty large.
That gap is enormous. Yeah, I mean, the only hope here is that
Cavs are better than
the Cavs are better than the SRS shows, and that the Warriors are a little bit worse. But yeah, I mean, certainly doesn't seem like it. I mean, certainly, yeah. I mean, obviously, what happened last night, the Warriors losing to the Lakers, is it's showing any kind of vulnerability is nice. But
someone calculated the probability of Curry and Thompson shooting like that, and it was like 1 in 500 or something. Like, you'd have to wait several seasons for such a game to happen again.
Wow. If you just took like their normal percentages or something.
Yeah, but I think the assumption there was that every shot was independent of each other, which is not the case. I think it would be more common than you think, but it's still very uncommon.
Yeah, interestingly, shooting, we've talked a little bit about this before, but shooting is unpredictable shot to shot, but in arrears, you often see trends, right? So you can say when someone was hot or cold in retrospect, but you can never say it in prospect. So if somebody has made 7 shots in a row, he is no more likely to make his 8th shot than he is at any other time. Which is, yeah, sort of an interesting finding. But yeah, in general, I like thinking about shots as independent samples, but they're not. It's probably more like 1 in 100 or something like that. That would be my guess.
Yeah, which is once a season, every season and a quarter. So.
Right. So what you're saying is we shouldn't expect that to happen 4 out of 7 times in the finals.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, good
I think
pro
the,
tip there.
I think the strategy of beating the Warriors by your best player going for 50 or the Warriors going, you know, 2 of 20 or whatever is not very sustainable.
Yeah, I feel like we end up talking about the Warriors every podcast here, but they really are the sort of 800-pound gorilla, and everything the Cavs do has to, you know, revolve around figuring out a way to beat them. And yeah, well, you know, hopefully there are smarter minds than us trying to figure it out.
Did you see that comment today about?
Oh no!
Kevin
yeah, go
Love.
Go ahead, go ahead. I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Yeah, so someone, I didn't watch the interview, but there was a comment that was floating around on Twitter, which was basically that Tyronn Lue was saying that the analytics told him.
The Cavs analytics team.
The Cavs analytics team told him that Kevin Love was their best on-ball defender on switches.
Right, so on pick and roll switches, Kevin Love is the best on-ball defender of shooting
guards,
right? Of guards.
Point guards, yeah.
So that is obviously preposterous on the face, but didn't you check to see, just to make sure that it was at least correct?
No, I don't have this. I think those are like very... Those are vaulted synergy numbers. Then I don't think we have them.
Yeah, I don't think. The NBA, the NBA stats doesn't have that kind of data available to it. But the Cavs do.
Either way, the disclaimer he put there was that it's a tiny sample, which makes sense. I mean, I can see that being the case if he has like eight possessions where this happens.
It could be. But... You could imagine like me out there playing. Somehow I got into an NBA game and I'm out there and you know there's a pick and I run around it and I'm guarding Steph Curry and he goes 0-for-1. Okay.
Right.
He misses or like even a shot. Like, and then you know, and then the statistics would show that I'm the best on-ball defender in the NBA, but that would not necessarily be true. I think I'm pretty good at playing pick up ball defense, but my DRPM would probably be about -50.
Yeah, someone on the subreddit said that this is equivalent of basically saying that if Mozgov goes for 1 of 2 from 3-point land, it's like saying that he's our best 3-point shooter.
Right. Right.
Which I guess makes sense, but obviously is not the case because, you know, sample size is a real thing.
Yeah. All right. So we obviously both agree that Kevin Love is not our best on-ball defender. The question is, how alarmed should we be that the Cavs front office or their analytics department is telling Tyronn Lue things like this? And do we think that Tyronn Lue was like maybe he caveated it with a small sample thing just to – like, I didn't hear the quote, so, like, I don't know, like – what his you know demeanor was when he said it, but on the face it's a little alarming that he's quoting bizarro stats like that for something that like is just sort of pretty obviously not true.
Yeah, it might be. I think there was a theory going around that he was doing it just to protect his guy, so he was just doing it because Love gets a lot of flack defensively, which is correct. I think we've talked about this before, that by most metrics he's an above average defender.
Right, but the narrative is that he's worse.
Yeah, the narrative is that he's one of the worst in the league, which is obviously not the case.
Right.
So I think the idea there was that he might have been giving him some extra credit to boost his confidence, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
But picking on-ball defense on guards, which is definitely not true.
Yeah, pick something that he's actually, you know...
Yeah, like pick something like post-defense, which is he's
right.
actually okay at.
Right.
But, like, why would you... Anyway.
I don't know. Look, I'm afraid to think about this too much because I don't want my conclusion to be that the Cavs analytics department is incompetent. By the way, if you guys are hiring, both Arnav and I are interested. but, yeah, hopefully there's just some sort of, like, telephone game thing going on there. And Anyway. All right. Well, did you have anything else you wanted to mention? We've been going for 30 minutes here, and I just wanted to do something quick after the game.
What do you think are the chances they lose to Sacramento?
Well, gosh. I think the Cavs will beat the Kings. I certainly remember the Cavs getting blown out by the Kings at Sleep Train Arena last season. Hopefully the Cavs remember that. My girlfriend still loves DeMarcus Cousins because she just remembers the announcer the whole game going like DeMarcus Cousins, and like she'll just say
Because
that
he was
sometimes to
scoring so
annoy me.
many.
Yeah, because he went insane. He actually didn't. He actually missed a lot of shots too, but he made enough so that my girlfriend's gonna forever torment me with that. I think the Cavs will win. The Kings are just not very good. They're sort of like a. They're one of these teams that, like, you know, sort of plays below their talent level. Like, DeMarcus Cousins is a really good player, but they can't figure out how to, like, get him into a position where they can win games. Their SRS is negative 1.8. You know, he...
Actually,
Go ahead.
one other question I was gonna ask is, what do you think of rest? Like, how do you think they should rest our big three down the stretch?
Right. Yeah, so, I would like to do a podcast on this topic, but I'll just quickly say what my theory is, and then I want to present some research I've done on this later. But I think that the Cavs should play nobody more than, say, 32 minutes a game. So really, that would only affect Love, Irving, and James. And
32
actually,
average or just
yeah, 30.
32 period any
Well,
game?
I mean, Arnav, to be honest here, like you have to basically say period, and then like hope that like you're able, you know. You need to basically play LeBron 16 minutes in the first half and 16 minutes in the second half. And the only way it gets above that, I mean, LeBron should mostly be finishing games. So, like, when he comes in, like, let's say he comes in with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, he better only have 24 minutes played at that point if you want to keep him at 32 minutes. What the Cavs do is they'll play him, say, what you'll always see is, like, they bench him at the end of the third quarter and he's already at 29 or 30 minutes. So now it's like, well, if you bring him in with 8 minutes left, he's going to be at 38 minutes. If you bring him in with 9 minutes left, he's going to be at 39 minutes. And, like, that's just not... Anyway, yeah, I want to explain why I think playing him that many minutes is dangerous to both his short, medium, and long-term career prospects. But yeah, I would like to see them play him less. That's not going to happen. The Cavs have established over the last 2 years that they either don't share my opinion on this matter, or they disagree with it, or they can't control LeBron. So I think it's one of those three. I don't think it's just that they haven't thought of it. So the only thing they can do is actually not let him play. And even that seems to be a little bit hard, but going forward, I would never let him play on the first or second night of back-to-backs.
Yeah, I
And
agree with that.
then I would have to look at the schedule. I think we have five more back-to-backs left, so that's already minus five games.
That's a
And then I would,
lot, dude.
I think we have five. We might be down to four now because we had two in the last week.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have at least four. And so yeah, I would always rest him for one of those. And there might be a couple other places where it might make sense to rest him, but maybe not. Maybe just those four games would be enough. And then, you know, probably give him the last game of the season off. Just so that he can get a good long, you know, sort of 5 or 6 day rest going into the playoffs. As for Love and Irving, I'm not sure. Irving never really looks like he is tired to me. Part of that is probably because he does actually tire less. Part of that is that he just always looks relaxed and calm. And part of that is that I'm probably actually not looking at it. He probably actually is getting tired. But again, like I would try to keep his minutes low, and then I would rest him maybe 3 games, and then Love probably the same. I want
Yeah.
Love has been in like an insanely bad shooting slump over the last, say, 2 or 3 weeks. I would like
Yeah,
to
I don't
see
think he's
him.
made it three in a while.
Yeah, I would like to see him shoot himself out of that before I start talking about.
Luckily, he's at least been going to the free throw line, so that's kept his true shooting percentage
Yeah, I
down to
mean, he's
15.
turning into Shane Battier in that, like, he doesn't fill up the box score, but holy smokes, every time you look, he's like, you know, plus five, plus four, like he's,
Yeah.
you know, getting it done out there. It's interesting. He's a smart player.
Yeah, no, he's a smart guy. I just wish his shooting wasn't so bad this year, but we'll see.
Well, there's still some time left, but yeah, we're running out of it here. But it seems unlikely that him and LeBron and Irving could all, like,
Be
I mean, it's like
so,
a
so
perfect
Irving's
storm
kind of
of
getting back, right?
terribleness.
So he was 50% tonight, and he's been 50% for a lot of the games recently. But
He was 3 of 7 tonight, but yeah.
oh yeah, that's right. At the end, he chucked
Yeah.
that final shot.
Right.
That was a bad shot. What did you think of
Yeah,
him?
we
It
didn't
was
even
kind of
talk
off
about that.
balance.
Yeah, so the Cavs needed three to tie. Even though LeBron had just made a three, they
I think
ran
it
a
was
play.
smart to give it up to
Oh,
Irving.
completely. Running a
Yeah.
play for LeBron James to make a three would be would really indicate some sort of problems with the team's decision-making process, in my opinion. And if for nothing else, this game was meaningless, right? In the scheme of things, it matters a little bit for home court, but for the most part, this game is meaningless. It's good, I think, to let others have a play run for them at the end so that they can get used to it. And so, yeah, they ran a play for Irving. They had 1.8 seconds left. They inbounded it. He took one dribble and then hoisted up a three. There were two guys on him. It was sort of obvious that it was going to be Irving because LeBron inbounded the ball. So they were able to double team Irving. And he just missed. It looked awkward, and he missed badly.
You couldn't use Love as a decoy because he was 0 of 3 that night, and JR was 1 of 8.
Right. And
Deli
was
0 of
3
as well. So.
Right. Yeah, gee, who could it be?
So it was pretty obvious it was going to go to the one guy.
Plus, I'd have to go back and look at the play, but I think somebody was on the far side of the court, in the far corner, so it's just obvious. They're just standing over there to draw the defense to him, but yeah, it was obviously not going to be that player. But anyway, yeah, brutal loss, but hopefully the Cavs can look at this like the Warriors are probably looking at their loss to the Lakers last night, like, oh, it was anomalous, you lose every once in a while, and these things happen. All right, I'm going to wrap it up unless you have anything else to say.
Well, I think that's good.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Arnav. All right, so this has been episode 9 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. At least it's my intention to try to do these a little bit more regularly. I like doing these post-game shows, so look for that soon. Thanks, guys.